Maybe a good way to look at that is to say, make sure it's propped against the right wall. And so the ladder for the first 25 years of my life was on a wall of recognition and admiration, and it's all about me. And now I think the ladder I'm trying to climb is to be somebody who's more and more valuable to people, to add more and more value to people, to the point to where I can leave a legacy. I'm climbing the ladder of legacy, but it's about helping people overcome their limitations and reach their potential rather than about my recognition.
Thank you so much for joining us for this Lead Like Jesus podcast. We are thrilled that you are joining us today. I am in studio with my husband, Chris Conley, who is a trustee for Lead Like Jesus. We have a friend and a fantastic guest with us today. Chris, I'll let you do the honors.
Absolutely. We have Bob Williamson with us. Bob is a great friend, has been a part of High Point Church for maybe 10 plus years now, but also has served in some extremely vital roles on our staff, is a tremendous leader, has an amazing background of leadership prior to High Point Church. We're going to talk about some new stuff that Bob's doing. So Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you both. Good to be here.
You own and run Potential to Results, and so you're working with leaders all of the time. What did God do to bring you to where you are? Share a little bit of the journey that you have been on.
Absolutely. I was very heavily influenced by my grandparents growing up. My grandfather, and he was a physician, and everyone in my family was medical, so I thought that would be the route I would take. Turned out I liked the leadership aspect more than the clinical aspect. So I went to college and got a master's degree in healthcare administration and moved to Memphis in 2004, sort of for my dream job. I was the chief operating officer of a local hospital at 27 years old, and all of a sudden found this place where I knew I wanted to be there, but I didn't know a whole lot. Really was a moment when I was really had to lean in and figure out what leadership meant to me and what were going to be the core tenets of my leadership.
How does one, you skipped a lot there, how does one become the COO of a large hospital at 27 years of age? I mean, you jumped right through college and master's pretty quickly, but there had to be some great preparation and development there to be able to have a position of that magnitude at that age.
You know, it's interesting. It wasn't because I was just the technician or the brilliant financial analyst. It was people. It was relationships. And going back in my childhood, I had very diverse worlds that I lived in. On one side of the family, this medical, very professional side. On the other side, it was very blue collar. And there was conflict in some of those houses. So at an early age, I learned to be a diplomat. I learned that because I had to. So I would say the reason for my success was because in that hospital, I could go have a conversation with the lawyers and the doctors in the boardroom and be just as effective with them as I was with the housekeepers on the floor. So it's all about people and relationships is how I got there.
Now, as I remember in those first few years, you were having great success as the COO of St. Francis Hospital. Talk to us a little bit about some of the keys to those success, and then tell us a little bit about some of those turning points where you began to evaluate leadership and kind of the primary goal and focus of where you wanted your future to be.
I think my primary key to success as a 27-year-old chief operating officer was to acknowledge what I don't know. And I instantly had to lead people that were 20, 30 years my senior. A lot of people in that situation will go in with something to prove and have to make sure they know everybody knows that they know what's going on. That wasn't my approach. Luckily, because I didn't know, I just simply tapped into those content experts around me and told them I needed them. What I found in that was when I go in and tell somebody I need them and I'm their leader and I'm their boss, that is a quick way to gain respect, a quick way to gain influence. And so that was the biggest key.
Bob, as you're describing your approach, that's one of humility. And as we are talking to an audience that is interested in leading like Jesus, that is certainly a characteristic we see of Jesus. And I know from your journey, faith played a part in your development and how your life has unfolded. Where did faith intersect your life at this point in time in the hospital and those years prior to that?
Faith first came into my life through a mother, right? The praying mother. Who was the nag growing up. But what I realized is so many of those prayers protected me from some things and shaped some things into me that were so important. But I had come through a season of really recognizing that I had spent that time right up until I became that COO, very much just seeking the admiration of the people around me. And God had taken me through a season of brokenness where a couple of things didn't work out to where that became clear to me. And so I was on the beginning of my journey to realize what it actually meant, not to get other people to be impressed by me, but to truly add value to them.
So, Bob, there was the season where, you know, you're learning as a leader, you're having success as a leader, your organization is prospering under your leadership and the leadership team. You've got everything that the world kind of promises as far as what should satisfy you. But yet there was something that was still a little bit discontent. Begin to walk us through, you know, what began to happen in your own leadership about looking for a greater value than just the value that comes from the rewards, the recognition, a great salary or something of that nature.
Well, I guess the only way to realize there's nothing at the top of a ladder is to climb the ladder. I certainly found the value in the work, and I'm not in any way saying it was less than work, but filling that hole, that void, became clear that no matter how much money I had or what success level I had or how big my hospital was I going to be able to find that there? But something big happened, Chris, and you helped me process a lot of this. At one point, I'm 27, and there was an older gentleman, and he had an integrity problem in the hospital, and I counseled him on it. This is not how we do this here, and you know we have to uphold the highest levels of integrity and honor. And that night, I went home and started thinking. I got a little pamphlet in the mail from Charles Stanley at In Touch Ministries, and it was a story about a little girl cheating. This little girl cheated, and her mom made her go make it right. It was like the weight of that hospital came onto my chest that night, actually. I was taken back to 10 years earlier when I was involved in some serious academic dishonesty in college, and I couldn't shake it. I couldn't escape it. Couldn't sleep at night. Was up, in and out of bed, praying. Felt forgiven because of my faith, but it was very clear that I wasn't going to be able to move forward in my life until I had a very difficult conversation. I sought out this professor whom I had deceived and cheated and then gotten a letter of recommendation and knew I had to call him. And unfortunately, he did still work at the school. I called him and told him everything I did. I thought I would lose my degree and lose my career. And there was a long pause on the other end of the phone. And he said, "Well, you know what I have to do, don't you?" And I said, "I guess so." He said, "Well, I have to forgive you as Christ has forgiven me." I went to a public liberal arts college. I didn't go to a Christian college. This guy was an organic chemistry professor. What are the chances of a science teacher?
Right.
And he said, "You have no idea what I've done in my life, son. I want you to go on and keep doing what you're doing." And it was my metaphor, right? Everything that was important to me, these things that you asked me about, the admiration of the people around me, the approval of my parents, my financial security. I was single at the time. Be my ability to get a wife, right? To operate in this circle. I didn't deserve it, and I wouldn't have gotten to keep it if it wasn't for a free gift from one man to another. And so I was moved by that. And I remember seeing you walking through the hospital on a pastoral visit one time. I'm like, "Hey, I go to your church, you know," and you invited me to lunch, and I told you that story. And you said, "I think God may be up to something." So we started talking, and 3 years later, I was in a new place to work.
Just like that.
It happens that way, doesn't it, sometimes? Well, you know, before we jump to the new place to work, the thing that I love about that story, in Romans 2:4, it says, "The kindness of God brings forth repentance." Forgiveness is obviously an expression of kindness. And when this professor forgave you and expressed that kindness, and I've seen this in your life, it did. It brought about a repentance in you that really was a turning point in your life and it has continued to be a defining moment. Talk about how that kindness really did propel you forward to make some definitive decisions about this is who I want to be.
Well, in an immediate way, it propelled me to help finance this guy's missionary son in China because I felt very grateful. I asked him what size check he wanted to go after that. But I think it just helped me realize that I truly had been given a lot. I had been given grace and mercy and this kindness. And I saw things clearly. I saw what was important in life is that it was now my call to bless other people in that way. And I didn't know exactly what that would look like. So it was probably the first time when I really realized that leadership was not about what I could get from people, but about what I could give to people.
Bob, as you're telling that story, I'm thinking about those people that are either driving in their car or running on the treadmill listening to a podcast.
I hate treadmills, by the way. I'd much rather just run, but not a treadmill.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, that was obviously an incredible risk for you as the COO at a young age, at any age. And in hindsight, you can see the reward. I wonder, before we move on, there are people with incredibly powerful positions listening to this, that the same God that loves you and forgave you might put upon their heart something that they need to make right. What would you say to that person that thinks the cost is too great, the risk is too much, that they would maybe have the same willingness to obey the Lord and the prompting that you did?
Directly to them, I would say, you can trust God. You can trust God. My fear at the time was that I was going to lose my career and have to go into ministry. Right? that was my fear.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, it was where I was, right? You know the pay cut, you know, that you might have to take. But what I found is, once I made that leap, I wouldn't give it back for anything. If you haven't risked it right, what are you doing to get your blood pumping? What big decision have you made that if God doesn't show up, you're going to fall? And I think as believers, if we're not making those, then maybe we're not really leaning into our faith. And for me, making something right like that was part of that. Mm-hmm. And I think, Karen, I'm thinking out loud, right? But the other side of it is, I didn't want to miss out on what could be God's better or even best plan for me. I didn't want to miss out.
Well, and Bob, as God was doing this work in your heart through the forgiveness of this professor, and there were other ways that God was pouring into your life, and you began to serve in the life of the church, and you and I began to have conversations, I tried to make the very logical transition that if God was doing such a significant work in your life and you were already the COO at a hospital, then maybe you should be the COO of High Point Church. But yet God even surprised both of us where, yes, you did enter into the ministry. You left the hospital, but in the most unexpected of ways. So tell us about how God called you for this, for a particular season, into the ministry and where he called you.
Yeah, I felt like my conditions, as they were, that I felt were being led by God, were to be the youth minister, the youth pastor. And I remember, Chris, you looked at me funny and said, well, okay, we'll give it a try. And again, I didn't know what I was doing.
Honestly.
Yeah. But I love the quote that Moses spent 40 years as a somebody and 40 years as a nobody and 40 years learning what God could do with a nobody. And I needed to become a nobody. I'm not saying it's not valuable work, but I needed to learn that the way you serve people and the way you change lives is by picking up an ungrateful teenager after school and taking them to Taco Bell. I needed that. I needed that to be carved into me. Of course, there was tremendous fruit in that, and there was a sweet season in ministry, but to me, that was part of that experience.
Yeah, one of the things that we saw from you during that season is, though you were the student pastor and you did many significant things as the student pastor, we saw that leadership gifting really express itself in your ability to then, we adopted Overton High School, an urban school here in town, and just have seen so much fruit come through that partnership and through all the different ways that we reached those students and then began to move those students toward tutoring and their ACT and their college prep, and some of those students going to college in such a way that maybe they never thought that was their future before. And then just ways that you've taken students on mission trips around the world and things of that nature. Maybe talk about a little bit about how your leadership gifting maybe even surprised you in different ways that God used it during that season.
Yeah, I found myself to be much more of an entrepreneur than I thought, looking back at it. Everything that you talked about are things I began and started.
Yes, yes.
And obviously now as an entrepreneur, that makes sense in its fullest expression. But I think what I learned is that what compels me is other people's potential. I just decided that I want to help people grow, and that there's something about watching somebody move from where they are to where ultimately God wants them to be. We use that language a lot, or where they are to where they could be. That is the thing that's most exciting to me.
as you think about potential, and obviously that's the name of your company, Potential to Results, I'd love for you to share some of the most rewarding examples of seeing potential in a young man or a young woman and seeing who those people have become over the last 10 years.
Wow. I think for some of the students that you spoke of that we reached in an urban context where the statistics are 80% of them have single moms, none of them have seen a healthy marriage or family. Several of those students are now married in their 20s, and they're fighting, and they're doing that, and they're leaning into that in a cool way that I don't even know that they would have had an expectation of marriage before we met them, but they started watching all the people that were around them in that regard. I think that would be one. Of course, like those students who, it's interesting, we can think of a couple who had decided that they were going to go off and be somebody big, and now they're serving as pastors at High Point. So those were teenagers as well at one point. So to see people in that place of surrender to something greater is what most excites me about those.
Absolutely. You know, as we went from a season in your life where you served as the student pastor, then there was a season where then God began to bring back all the training that you had to make you a COO in the first place, and you transitioned into that role at High Point Church. Talk a little bit about just what you learned from that experience of, okay, you've been a COO in the business world, now you're a COO in ministry. You know, what's some of the overlap of those principles? What works in both of those worlds? And then what did you learn from the ministry aspect of leading in that way?
You know, when I made that transition, Chris, I just like building teams and leading people. And so it's a natural transition as I was able to do that. But I think the transferability is people are people, and people are motivated by what people are motivated by. And whether or not I'm in a Fortune 100 organization or a nonprofit church ministry, as a leader, I have to know what motivates my people. And I think we learned that. And talk about two different types of leadership: transactional leadership, where people are a means to an end, and then transformational leadership, where people are the end, and by cultivating them, I get the results on the other end of those relationships. So I think that was a direct transferability. What I have found is that when you can take that principle, which is a biblical principle, and help people in the marketplace understand that, it's a game changer, and eyes become open in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Bob, you have graciously agreed to do a part two, and we want to talk all about just your leadership and coaching and what you're doing now. But before we wrap this particular podcast up, I'm just sitting here kind of digesting what we've talked about. I love the fact that I think what your story represents is someone who's willing to ask the Lord what he wants, who's willing to listen to the answer, and who's willing to obey. You've taken some risks that maybe in a secular sense wouldn't make sense to that person out there that doesn't have faith, but because you trust him with your future and know his will is best, that you've been willing to do that. But you said something earlier that I wonder if maybe now with hindsight, if you put your leadership hat on and your coaching hat on and there was an executive across the table from you, you mentioned the fact that you've got to climb that ladder to find out what's on top of the building, right? Mm. What would you say now in hindsight, as you're coaching someone who maybe thinks that the top of that building is the goal, but you know that there's something more than the accolades of man, what would you say to them to maybe prevent them from having to go all the way up that ladder before hearing from the Lord if there is something? Now, certainly, obviously, we all know around this table that God uses you in a corporate setting now, in a secular setting now, and there's lots of ministry in that, but that would help that executive out there maybe have that paradigm shift to know there's more than just the paycheck, the title, the things that the world offers.
Great question, Karen. And I think my first response is it's hard for people with your husband's personality type and my personality type to say, you're not climbing anything anymore, right? I want to climb a ladder. Maybe a good way to look at that is to say, make sure it's propped against the right wall. And so the ladder for the first 25 years of my life was on a wall of recognition and admiration, and it's all about me. And now I think the ladder I'm trying to climb is to be somebody who's more and more valuable to people, to add more and more value to people, to the point to where I can leave a legacy. I'm climbing the ladder of legacy, but it's about helping people overcome their limitations and reach their potential rather than about my recognition.
I love that. And you're modeling the very thing that you're actually trying to impart to other people, for them to find value, for them to have some significance outside of their accomplishments.
Well, I'll have to think about that one, but all right.
Well, and that's where we're, as we look forward to part two of this podcast, coaching is all about making someone else better. And there are few joys in life than giving to others and seeing them grow in their potential, and for their potential to actually be fulfilled, and for them to no longer have that label of just potential, right? And so I want you to listen to this next podcast with great anticipation and excitement, because every great leader needs to transition where they're not only a leader, but they're a coach as well. And your greatest joy will come from developing other leaders.
Bob, I know that there will be people interested in checking out the work that you do. What is the best place for people to connect with you, contact you, learn more about your business?
Absolutely. My website is potential2results.com. It's the number two. So potential2results.com.
Perfect. And if you want more information about Lead Like Jesus, go to leadlikejesus.com, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time.